I spent a bit of time in Romania, 98, during a very, very cold winter there, and loved it completely. It was just beautiful there.
Romania.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was shooting a couple films for Full Moon at the time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's when they had their studio over there, yeah, so
do they really shoot in Romania? Hello and welcome to the Halloween edition of Simply Radio. Boo. That's about all I can prepare for you. I wanted to have something really special, but I couldn't think of anything to do in voice.
Just only. Add a sound effect there.
I should add a really sound good, effect, yeah. Maybe, yeah. Anyway, sure. Today on Simply Radio, we have Don and Pia as our panel, and we're talking with Jeff Farley, who's done makeup effects for a real lot of movies. I won't go on with the list. I'll let him tell you a little bit about himself. And so I'll turn it over to Jeff right now.
Cool. Well, a little about myself. I started out as a kid growing up in Los Angeles, and pretty young in life, I met I started hanging out at Forry Ackerman's, who was the editor of Famous Monsters. And through him, I met all kinds of people like John Landis and Ray Harryhausen. And through that, I ended up getting my first job on a William Shatner movie called Kingdom of the Spiders back in the late 70s. I was just like a teenager at the time and just kind of cemented my wild passion to enter the industry. And so, like, you know, over 30 years later, I'm still sort of kicking around doing it. And I just finished up Ginger Dead Man 3 and also had a Camera Obscura web series that I did all the research for and co-produced with Drew Daywalt. I was involved in that show also, and then since then I've been like producing a bunch of horror short films with Drew, and we won an award last night, and we have one showing up on Halloween on dreadcentral.com called The Bad Cookie, so we'll talk a little more about that later. So.
Awesome. What was the award that you won last night? Pardon?
It's called the Thrill Ride Award. It was for Alex Bram's Carnival of Darkness 2. This is his second horror short film festival, and they ran a few of our films along with it, but Poly Deus, which was one that we shot earlier this year, just blew everyone away. But we got the award. It's like, really, it was the only award in the show, so we won it. So
great.
But it was fun. Really great night, and met a lot of really cool people too last night, and a lot of really good, talented people out there. So it's amazing. So I feel humbled and you know, really nice to be part of that group. So
okay, well, to talk a little bit about your bio now, one of the names that sticks out for me is Ray Harryhausen. I was just wondering, you know, what was he like, and was he good to work with? And he was a very talented guy.
I never worked with Ray. What happened was, I mean, I was a big fan of Ray's, and I mean, just like any other kid,
yeah,
up in the 70s watching, you know, all of his movies, and I it was through Forry Ackerman again, Forrest J. Ackerman, who was the editor of Famous Monsters of Filmland magazine. And he lived in the Hollywood Hills. And it turns out that my mom knew a guy, an ex-boyfriend of my stepmother's, actually worked for Forry. So we actually managed to become a friend of Forry's and hung out at his place for about 3 years or so as a teenager. You know, being there like every weekend, and it was a pretty amazing experience. He had this great museum underneath his mansion where he had like all these great movie props from King Kong, and you know, just everything you could imagine as a kid, you know, was there. And And so I was invited to 4E's on New Year's Eve of 1976 and 77 to meet Ray Harryhausen. Mm. And that night I met another guy named Doug Jones, who not the Doug Jones who was in Pan's Labyrinth, even though I know him also, but this guy had was working on a film called Kingdom of the Spiders, and they needed some help making background spiders, and it turns out I was living in the same city in Glendale where he lived, and our school was pretty close to where he was, so he just kind of recruited a couple of friends of mine and I to go and help make all these like background spiders. We just made tons of them, and you know, so no credit or anything like that, but it's just kids, you know.
That's kind of cool. What a great experience to have growing up.
Yeah. It was neat. Privileged childhood. But doing what I do now is pretty lucky, yeah. So.
Yeah, true. I mean, you have an amazing number of credits. And I guess the next thing to go on to was to ask, yeah. Well, I guess what I'd like to ask, because you do have so many credits, is what... What would you say was your favorite job that you did?
Oh, gosh. You know, it's hard to say really what a favorite is, but I could say that some of the best experiences I've had in this industry were sort of like goals that I had set. And one of them was to work for Empire Pictures back in the 80s, the guys who did Ghoulies and Troll and all those films. And they were shooting a lot of films in Italy. Charlie Band at that time had the studio, the Aldino De Laurentiis studio outside of Rome. And he was shooting all these movies there. And I just desperately wanted to work for them. And I had actually ended up working on Serpent and the Rainbow first. But then after that, I went over to John Beekler's and ended up spending the last 8 months or so of Empire's life working for John, and spent the last three months of that in Italy on a show called Arena. That was a pretty big thrill. And then coming back, I worked on the Blob remake. And as a kid, I had corresponded with Jack Harris. So that was kind of a cool thing, getting involved in that. And doing Babylon 5, the fifth season of that, and getting, you know, just little things like that. It's like little tidbits. It's like, it's hard to pick one favorite because I don't know. It's then, you know, everything
else.
You must have
a favorite effect that you did.
Oh, you know, something like that. I mean, I did what would be like a really cool one I could say that I did. You know, it's been, again, so many effects. And I think recently, I would say that probably Corpulence from Camera Obscura is probably, which is kind of the big overweight demon character with crow beaks for eyeballs.
And we can all watch that online, right? Camera Obscura, or is that not online?
You can. Yeah. Yes, you can. You can watch that online on www.dailymotion.com. It's actually the final episode is airing today, the 20th episode. But it has an exclusive run for 1 year on Daily Motion, so it's available there for the next year. Anybody can watch all 20 episodes. They can, you know, but each one is probably, I think the longest one is maybe 7 or 8 minutes or something like that. But they go as low as about three and a half minutes, and it's a pretty intense show, and it's really seriously one of the best shows I have ever worked on, thanks to Drew DeWalt. I mean, he is just an amazing filmmaker, and I am very, very proud to have an association with him.
No spoilers on Camera Obscura. I've only watched the first three episodes.
Uh-huh.
But I was really, when it started out, watching Jack Klugman walking on the screen there, that really blew me away. I thought that was just absolutely, at least the episodes that I watched, he was absolutely brilliant in that. He's one of my favorite actors, or favorite character actors.
You know, again, yeah, I mean, I grew up watching Jack, and I mean, you know, he did, you know, from The Odd Couple and Quincy, MDV. As a kid, my best friend's dad was Jack's driver at Universal on the show. So that's where I met Jack first, was back. Actually, I never even saw him on Camera Obscura, but I met him as a kid during the Quincy show. And, but, you know, but it was, you know, it was an amazing experience to have him involved in this because, A, it already, it cemented in my mind that we had a really top-notch show. And, B, he had done probably the best Twilight Zone episodes. Really some of the, I can never remember titles. But look it up, and the guy really...
He did the one with the pool, they were playing pool?
The pool episode. He did also the one with Billy Mummy, the one with Pip, that was a really heart-wrenching episode, and God, he's just such a good actor. But he got involved because he was sent the script. As a matter of fact, Drew was looking for some sort of character like that. I don't know if it was Jack that he had really in mind, but Jack was sent the script like anybody else would, and I don't think they really expected to hear back. But like the next morning, they get a call from him saying that he wanted to meet them and talk it over. But Drew had asked him during this meeting, about those Twilight Zone episodes and why he really hadn't done any kind of supernaturally based or themed shows since those Twilight Zones. And those was the early 60s when he did his one there. And he said that because he hadn't seen anything that good till Camera Obscura. So, again, I was pretty thrilled working on that because it really cemented my friendship with Drew. It made us partners, and, we've been making a ton of, really incredible short films over the past year now. And, it's sort of revitalized my career in a lot of ways. I was kind of known for doing a lot of very low budget horror movies and stuff, and which is nothing wrong with that, but I kind of want to do a little more than that. And Drew has allowed me to really stretch my wings and actually do something that I care about.
Drew was a guest here not that long ago, and I have to say that I was bowled over, really, because when we first started talking to him, we thought we knew some things about him, and then when he started talking about all the things that he had done, and it was like, whoa, I've been a fan of Furio, and now I'm a fan of his, I think he does really, really amazingly nice work, and I would not be surprised at all in the future if he has something really great going on, and something big, like a real feature, I do have some questions, I don't know, they might be boring to other people, I don't know, but you have been in this business a long time, okay? Yes. During this time that you have been in this business, how has makeup changed through the years? Mainly I'm asking because technology had changed a lot, and now we have HD, and we get a lot more detail and things like that on our televisions and stuff. Has that affected anything at all as far as your work goes?
You know, it has, and not really all to the negative, like some people would think. I got in as a kid in the late 70s, and back then, really the best adhesive you had to glue down an appliance, except for Dick Smith doing a lot of experiments with various medical adhesives and stuff like that. Really, a lot of what we had was spirit gum. And since then, when I got really in the 80s and stuff, things had started switching over to more thinner, better, and more durable medical adhesives, a lot safer also. And even then, there's been some changes since then. So there's just kind of on that end, just kind of the materials, the technical materials end on my side, that stuff has changed. We've had silicone appliances come in. Just some really amazing artists have emerged who they're just doing incredible work with, you know, with all kinds of new materials and even traditional materials like gelatins and foam latexes. And
does it matter at all now that people have bigger TVs with bigger resolution and that kind of stuff? I mean, do you have to be more careful? Do you have to be more of an artist, or is it, you know, that doesn't matter so much, or what?
I think it does help in some ways, but, you know, I am sort of like now straddling kind of this whole new technology myself, and so we're shooting on the 7D right now, the Canon 7D, and I'm able to, you know, to still do a lot of what I've done, you know, pretty much the same way I've done it in the past, very few refinements. But then again, the whole goal of makeup is really to do it in a lot of ways as light as possible. But say, like, in some cases, yeah, there, you know, might have to be things like going back to full face appliances rather than breaking things down into small pieces. But I think that, you know, but we have a lot of new materials again, like also things like these new Prozade appliances, which were developed a few years ago for Passion of the Christ. You know, they're actually medical adhesive appliances, which are kind of like tattoos in a way, dimensional tattoos. And, you know, you make them all kinds of, you know, wounds and all kinds of other little appliances. And actually a lot of the old age appliances for Benjamin Button, you know, were made this way. So it's really kind of the technology is improved in some ways for us, you know, and also maybe we might be getting to things like, CGI and things like that also, which if it's married well with what we do, is good.
When you say your tattoos, do you mean that they stay on for an extended period of time, or do they come off every day?
You can take them off. Well, in the case of what I was just talking about, these are sort of like actual dimensional pieces. Like, they actually are three-dimensional. So, like, they're a sculpted piece, which is then molded a certain way, and they're actually filled with a medical adhesive that we use. It's a water-based medical adhesive, and then it goes through a drying process. It's kind of technical, but in the end, you end up with a little piece which is basically attached to a piece of a sheet of plastic on one side and a sheet of paper on the other side. And it's kind of an old, like, decal, like old model kit decals. And then eventually you're able to attach this, because it's medical adhesive, it's sticky. So you can actually mount it to a person's skin, attach it, and then you use water to slide the paper off, like an old model kit decal, like I was saying.
Okay.
And it actually ends up being like a little dimensional piece. And again, in Passion of the Christ, if anybody had seen that, Jim Caviezel is covered in those, in a lot of the scenes, his body is covered in those pieces because A, they were lightweight. B, they can be actually made either transparent, or they can be made like color, like flesh, and painted like flesh really easily. And they're also really easy to apply and make. And, you know, so there's a lot of advantages to them. So it's a new technology based on a material that we've had for a number of years, but somebody was kind of playing around with it and came up with something new. And it really just, you know, it kind of revolutionized things, because we're making all kinds of new little pieces that actually are more realistic these days than they ever have.
I understand that when they filmed The Dark Knight, that the Two-Face's effects was not makeup. That when he was doing the acting, he was doing it with a green screen mask, something on his face.
Yeah.
But even then, there's still, you know, as an artist who's doing, you know, makeup, there's still that makeup component. I mean, have you done any work like that?
You know, I am moving into
what do you feel about? How do you feel about that? As far as, you know,
I think it's, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I think it's an interesting aspect, because it actually can do things to the face really physically that we can't. But I somehow just never seem to feel that we're ever going to be completely decimated. You know, a lot of the other techniques like stop motion is still being used to this day, and not to the extent it used to be, but because it doesn't have to be. But I've kind of experimented with a few things like that, and I think we're going to do a couple effects like that in our films coming up soon. And And, you know, I think it's an interesting way to, again, to change the human face.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's with a couple of things I just wanted to bring up. Once, you know, obviously you mentioned Harryhausen.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is even my kids who are 10 and 15 know who he is.
Sure.
And you know, one, you know, from Monsters Incorporated, and then watching, you know, like things like Clash of the Titans. And the other thing, yeah, you talk about stop motion that's still being used is that both of my boys love doing stop motion movies.
Oh, cool.
And it's and even at, you know, at 10 years old, he understands the concept, and it's funny to watch him do,
yeah,
this because it's going to turn out terrible. But when you put it all together, it really comes out well.
You know, it's funny too because it's very hands on. It's a great learning tool.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
And kids can, and you know, and of course, you know, after, you know, half an hour or even less, is they can film something and then see it. And so it's just kind of cool. I enjoyed watching them to put these together and putting them online.
I think that's amazing. I mean, I remember doing that as a kid, but with Super 8, and boy, you know, we didn't have the advantage of, you know, the speed. I mean, we had to,
yeah,
wait a couple weeks sometimes for, you know, for the film to come back, so. And then we get to see really how bad we were, but you know, we had loads of fun doing it.
Yeah.
I would say. Oh, but that was great. I mean, you know, I had a great time.
Sometimes when I watch like a horror movie or a sci-fi or something like that, and sometimes you watch something that you think is decent, and then when the monster or whatever shows up, it looks like crap. While other times you can watch something online and then you're like blown away by the quality. In your opinion, what is the difference, you know, in the quality, how it shows up on screen, say lighting or and everything in combination, or is it just purely the makeup artist type person?
You know, it is, but that's a really good question, because I believe me, I'm guilty of both of those sorts of things. I mean, I've done some things that I cringe at thinking of, like, you know, the effect and really kind of how it really didn't work out the way that I wanted it to. But in the case of like Camera Obscura, where really, I mean, I wasn't reinventing the wheel on that show, and the way it was shot really made it look good. And it is actually a lot of it. It's because everything is a collaboration anyways. So if your director of photography doesn't know lighting well and, you know, it doesn't really know composition well and stuff like that, you know, anything that you do, even the best piece that you make, may not end up looking as good. And I've worked on plenty of films where I've done, I think, really some very good work, and it just wasn't shot well, because a lot of times we just have to rush through these things, and I've just had to learn to accept, you know, that you know, you just kind of gotta get it, you know, get it done and move on. So so sometimes it is my fault sometimes, or it is sometimes the fault of the effects artist, because maybe they just don't have the time or the budget. But a lot of times it's just sort of a collaborative thing, and it doesn't work because it's just really the rush nature of the business.
Okay. A lot of our audience is are writers. Mm-hmm. Some of them are filmmakers as well.
Yes.
Do you have any suggestions, tips, or whatever for writers as far as writing monsters or anything that involves a special makeup type things or anything like that that you do?
You know, it's be honest with you. You can be as descriptive as you'd like, or actually, in some cases, as nondescript as you like. I think it really depends on, say, the tone of the script and really the intention of the writer to kind of create the world that they're creating. And sometimes, I mean, I've had scripts in which there's been incredibly detailed accounts of sort of like what you've got to perform, and you know you're going to have to go in and change it anyways, because, I mean, it's maybe just so over the top that your budget can't allow for the effect, so you have to kind of go in and retailer it a bit. But in a lot of cases, I've worked on scripts that really have very, very little description of the effect. It's just kind of a, you know, kind of a line here, there. Maybe it's a word, just kind of a, you know, that kind of gives you kind of a seed of an idea. So I think it's very, you know, it'd be very constricting to kind of be, you know, too opinionated about that. Other than to say that I think that it's, a writer really should be free to do it the way that they feel is necessary.
So would you say that if a writer puts a lot of description in their script, as far as the makeup goes, that's likely to be changed?
It can be a lot of times. I mean, really, it depends on the budget too. I mean, actually, I mean, I've a lot of times I've had, like I said, in one case, I had a script that had a very, very, it was very descriptive in terms of how the makeup effects were to be, and the producer was really adamant on everything being perfect and matching what's in the script, yet they slashed my budget and really made it difficult for me to perform my duties to a competent nature. And I was able to find compromises that work, but it still kind of changed certain dynamics in the script. And I think that in some ways, you know, in writing a script, I mean, really, I mean, unless you're writing like just kind of Z-grade, you know, some sort of Z-grade horror thing or sci-fi, you know, throwaway. I mean, I work on plenty of those things. But really, character is like, you know, how large are the chick's boobs, you know, something like that. But the things that I'm working on with Drew right now, I mean, it's great to really work with character. And even in these short films, you know, Drew puts a lot of thought into the characters first. And that is really important, and I've seen the importance of that lately. I think that's where the writer should really focus, is you know, really kind of the structure of the story, really, you know, telling the best story they can and really developing the characters to their really kind of fullest extent. No, I'm sorry, but the effects come secondary after that. Even I would say that.
I just wanted to ask you, of all the movies that you have seen, which movie blew you away the most as far as your job as the makeup artist or an artist? I really mean that, you know.
Was that like any film that I'd seen in the past or anything I worked on?
Anything that you have seen.
Okay, the original Dawn of the...
Who do you admire? Who do you, like, who do you... When you watched the movie, you went, whoa.
You know, the original Dawn of the Dead was with Tom Savini's effects. Really blew me away because, it was an unrated film when I saw it. And I had to get in with an older friend. So that was, you know, the kind of the mystery of that. And just seeing how the effects were done and then reading them in Fangoria and then Tom Savini's book, Grand Illusions, had come out. And really, you got to see the mechanics of how things were done and the way he kind of presented it as a magic trick. And it intrigued me. And I thought it was fascinating. And John Carpenter's remake of The Thing with Rob Bottin's effects was another real eye-opener in a lot of ways and really kind of steered me. I wanted to do stop motion originally. I mean, that's really kind of, and I was, Ray Harryhausen, like I said, was my hero. And I was actually spending a lot of time with guys like Jim Danforth and David Allen. And so I eventually steered into makeup effects from a more kind of visual, kind of the post-production visual effects. And I decided to go into a pre-production and production end of it and actually get involved in that because the results were more immediate and there was a lot of innovations being made and I was just fascinated by it. I mean, I've always been interested in this stuff, but I really saw how I could be involved in it. So,
you know, it's kind of interesting because that you say that you've always been interested in this stuff because in the profile of what I expect a makeup special effects person to be, that is someone that's always been interested in that. Do you find that to be true?
For the most part, yes. I mean, it's like just kind of the glue that holds us together because, you know, because, I mean, as a nature, we're really kind of competitive in a lot of ways, and sometimes that competition can turn ugly. And that's like, you know, the craven side of our industry, and I don't really care for that too much. I like to see my friends get the job as much as I like to get the job also. But, I've kind of been working on my own now, and that's how I have managed hooking up with Drew. So it's been a good thing for me in a lot of ways.
All right. So, I guess that brings us to the end of Simply Radio for today. Thank you very, very much, Jeff, for being our guest, and you were a very good guest. We look forward to seeing what you and Drew produce in the future.
We have a ton of stuff, believe me. It seems to be never ending. So, we got a lot of stuff like down coming very soon. Also, I also want to add that that Pauly Deus, the film that won the award last night, will premiere on Fearnet.com in early November.
Cool. And happy Halloween, everybody.
Yes. Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween to all of you guys and everybody else.